Former President Donald Trump is released after surrendering to Georgia authorities on charges related to his alleged efforts to upend his 2020 election loss in the state.
I really believe this is a very sad day for America. This should never happen. If you challenge an election, you should be able to challenge an election. I thought the election was a rigged election, a stolen election.
Plus, intelligence officials doubt the presumed death of Russian mercenary leader Yevgeny Prigozhin in a plane crash was an accident.
It was done in such a way as to send a very public signal to others within the Russian establishment, within the military, within the political, within the economic elites, which is, if you cross me, if you challenge me, you will pay the ultimate price.
And how some companies are using artificial intelligence to bring back the dead. Today is Friday, August 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning, I'm Lori London in Washington. Former U.S. President Donald Trump pleaded not guilty in a Fulton County, Georgia court Thursday to 41 charges that he illegally schemed to overturn the 2020 election in the state. He was released on a $200,000 bond. Before boarding a flight back home, Trump spoke briefly from the airport, where he called the charges a travesty of justice.
We did nothing wrong, I did nothing wrong, and everybody knows it. I've never had such support. And that goes with the other ones, too. What they're doing is election interference. They're trying to interfere with an election. There's never been anything like it in our country before. This is their way of campaigning. And this is one instance, but you have three other instances. It's election interference. So I want to thank you for being here. We did nothing wrong at all. And we have every right, every single right, to challenge an election that we think is dishonest, that we think it's very dishonest.
The Fulton County prosecution is the fourth criminal case against Trump since March, when he became the first former president in U.S. history to be indicted. And unlike in other cities that did not require him to pose for a mugshot, a booking photo of him was taken. The Russian Federal Air Transport Agency on Thursday officially confirmed the death of Yevgeny Prigozhin, the chief of the Russian mercenary organization known as Wagner Group. Prigozhin was on the passenger manifest for the plane that crashed northwest of Moscow Wednesday. VOA's Anna Rice has the story.
A private plane carrying Wagner Mercenary Group Chief Yevgeny Prigozhin crashed Wednesday, August 23rd, in the Tver region northwest of Moscow. Russian officials say Prigozhin, Wagner leader Dmitry Utkin, and Prigozhin's senior aide Valery Chikalov died in the crash, along with four other passengers and three crew members. Scott Lucas, a professor of international politics at the University College Dublin, says the crash was likely no accident.
Western intelligence agencies, not just the U.S., but European agencies, are sending out signals that it looks like that it was an anti-aircraft missile that took this down. Now, you know, what you then take as the next step, unless you believe that a Russian anti-aircraft battery went rogue or that there was some type of, you know, horrible mistake, that's an operation. That is a targeted assassination.
Russia's official state news agency TASS reported that an investigation has been ordered into the crash. The crash happened exactly 2 months after Prigozhin started a mutiny against Russia's military leadership that lasted roughly 24 hours. Prigozhin and his forces turned around before reaching Moscow and were subsequently permitted to relocate to Belarus. Andrei Karabkov, an expert on Russia teaching at Middle Tennessee State University, was not surprised at all by Prigozhin's death.
It's been exactly 2 months, and it's very symbolic. From the start, I kept saying Prigozhin is doomed. He's violated the most important Kremlin rule. He wasn't loyal to the leader. What happened 2 months ago was embarrassing enough for Putin, so this crash was to be expected.
Lucas says that if the plane was deliberately brought down, it's Putin's way of sending a message.
It was done in such a way as to send a very public signal to others within the Russian establishment, within the military, within the political, within the economic elites, which is, if you cross me, if you challenge me, you will pay the ultimate price.
Karabkov adds that while the Wagner chief's death might benefit Putin, it likely won't benefit the Russian war effort in Ukraine.
Prigozhin showed himself as an effective manager and commander. Now the consequences will include tightening of control and grip, demanding more loyalty from commanders. But this can lead to loss of effectiveness and loss of control over both Wagner fighters and similar structures.
On Thursday, Putin offered condolences to families of plane crash victims and said Prigozhin was a talented person who made some serious mistakes. Anna Rice, VOA News, Washington.
At least one person was killed and 16 others wounded in Russian attacks across Ukraine on Thursday, as Kyiv marked 32 years of independence from Moscow. Meanwhile, frontline soldiers engaging in brutal fights to retake Russian-occupied villages in southern Ukraine say they're facing fierce defenses. VOA's Heather Murdoch visited the recently recaptured village of Makarivka and files this report.
The counteroffensive began in early June, and so far, Ukraine has taken only a handful of villages, despite months of brutal fighting. Soldiers say the current offensive sometimes resembles battles from as far back as World War I. First, Ukrainian forces attack with artillery, forcing Russian forces to retreat as the infantry moves in, taking over Russian positions. Ukrainian forces then often fight from the same trenches the Russians dug and later fled. Soldiers say they had hoped to move faster, but at least they are gaining ground. He says the speed of victory varies from battle to battle in this counteroffensive. In northeastern Ukraine, Russia is on the offense near the city of Kupiansk, even as Ukrainians recapture land here in the south. In recent battlegrounds like this one, we find Russian anti-tank mines, clothes, and some of their bodies scattered on the ground. In areas Ukraine took first, we can see that nature is already reclaiming some of the abandoned residential areas.
Soldiers say the villages around here that Ukraine has recently recaptured from Russian forces are only villages in name because there's nothing left. Reporting from Makarivka in Ukraine, Heather Murdoch, VOA News.
The U.S. says it will start training Ukrainian pilots to fly U.S.-made F-16 fighter jets starting in October at an Air National Guard base. It's part of a U.S. and European effort to get advanced fighter planes to Ukraine for its defense against invading Russian forces.
This is about the long-term support to Ukraine. This is not about the counteroffensive that they're conducting right now.
Pentagon Press Secretary Brigadier General Pat Ryder, in a briefing Thursday, noted it will take years for Ukraine to have battle-ready F-16 squadrons. And in an effort to further ramp up pressure on Moscow over its invasion of Ukraine, the United States is imposing new sanctions against several Russian individuals and entities for their role in the abduction and deportation of Ukrainian children.
The United States will not stand by as Russia carry out these war crimes and crimes against humanity.
In making the announcement, Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield said additional steps are also being taken to impose visa restrictions on three Russia-installed authorities over their involvement in human rights abuses against minors in Russian-occupied areas of Ukraine. We're following these other stories from around the world. Firefighters struggled Thursday against strong winds and hot, dry conditions to tame multiple wildfires ravaging Greece, including one in the country's northeast that officials say is the largest recorded in the European Union. The five BRICS developing nations say they will admit Saudi Arabia, Iran, Ethiopia, Egypt, Argentina, and the United Arab Emirates to the group, a move aimed at growing the bloc's clout in efforts to rebalance prevailing world order. Japan started releasing treated radioactive water from the wrecked Fukushima nuclear power plant into the Pacific Ocean on Thursday, a polarizing move that prompted China to announce an immediate blanket ban on seafood from Japan. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
You had a rough week and only got a few hours of sleep each night, but the weekend is here, so you try to make up for all that lost sleep. Not so fast. Researchers at Penn State University found if you sleep less than 5 hours each weeknight, cardiovascular health measures, which include heart rate and blood pressure, tend to get worse by week's end. They say trying to catch up on your lost sleep during the weekend is not enough to get these health markers back to normal. In a press release, researcher Anne Marie Chang says only 65% of adults in the U.S. consistently get the recommended 7 hours of sleep each night. She also says there's a lot of proof that suggests this lack of sleep is linked with a risk of long-term cardiovascular disease. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Lori London. The U.S. Republican presidential candidates sparred on a host of issues Wednesday night in the first debate leading up to the 2024 national election. But as VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman tells us, some of the most spirited moments targeted frontrunner Donald Trump, who skipped the political confrontation.
The two-hour debate, the first held by Republicans in this election cycle, featured spirited exchanges about what one of the moderators called the elephant who is not in the room, the absent party frontrunner, former President Donald Trump. Some of the contenders, such as Trump's former Vice President Mike Pence and former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, deemed Trump disqualified from serving again because of what they said was his disrespect for the Constitution, as well as the more than 90 felony counts he now faces. Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley declared, "Trump is the most disliked politician in America. We can't win a general election that way." However, political novice Vivek Ramaswamy, rising in the polls, stood by Trump, saying he believed he was the best president of the 21st century. Ramaswamy also stood apart in questioning American support for Ukraine, saying China is a bigger threat to the United States than Russia. Several other candidates, including Haley, also a former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, expressed strong support for Ukraine in defending itself against Russian forces. After the debate, Pence told reporters no one should have been surprised by his vigor on the debate stage.
"And I was the leading champion of conservative values in the Trump-Pence administration. I know how to fight, and I was happy to bring that fight tonight."
Pence's primary sparring opponent of the evening, Ramaswamy, said he relished the verbal barrages directed at him by the former vice president.
"Mike Pence kept coming at me with that with the experience differential. I think that's a great thing, because I don't think the people in this country are interested in going back to people who recite slogans they memorized in 1980.
The Republicans hold their second debate next month in California, but only one of the candidates will be back here on the same stage in Wisconsin next July to accept the party's nomination. Steve Herman, VOA News, Milwaukee.
Sanctions imposed on Niger following the July military coup have resulted in rising food prices across West Africa, as well as worries that the Niger situation could spiral out of control. Sananu Tord has more from Accra, Ghana.
At the Agbogbloshie market in Accra, traders sort through heaps of rotten onion stock to salvage the good ones to sell. Ghana imports about 70% of its onion from Niger and has been experiencing shortages since the West African Regional Bloc, ECOWAS, closed the borders around Niger following the July 26th coup that ousted President Mohamed Bazoum. Mamoudou Alhado is an onion trader, and says the regional security challenges are disrupting the food supply chain, raising prices.
"Before, when they take the onion from Niger, they can pass Burkina to Ghana. But because of jihadists, you know jihadists, there are many there. They are attacking the cars. So later, they are returning to Benin and enter Togo and come to Ghana. So about few days ago, when the coup happened in Niger, and the Benin people too, they closed their borders."
A 2022 report by the Global Network Against Food Crisis placed about 41 million people in West Africa and the Sahel region at risk of experiencing an acute food crisis or worse. Ziad Hamwi is a co-chair of the Food Trade Coalition for Africa. He says ECOWAS' decision to place border sanctions on Niger threatens the entire region's food security.
"There's a lot of food across the region. The problem is not with growing the food. The problem is with moving the food from the areas of production to the areas of consumption."
Hamwi calls on the regional bloc to prioritize food security in the approach to the Niger coup.
"We have to start by examining the deficiencies in our regional agriculture value chains and to look at what really the problems are, to address these problems and to avoid the scenarios happening over and over again because of this nexus between security and economics and politics."
ECOWAS says it is prepared to send troops against Niger's military junta leader if they cannot be persuaded to restore constitutional order. Security analysts have criticized the move, noting the absence of a solid plan for military intervention in the region, or any plan to deal with refugees and other likely consequences of a war. Mutaru Mumuni Mukhtar is the executive director for the West African Center for Counter-Extremism. He says Niger has existing challenges with violent extremism and ethnic conflicts that threaten the entire region.
So these things are very makes the country very vulnerable for any kind of military intervention. So when you intervene militarily without a blueprint for containing possible fallout from it, there's a tendency that vulnerable young people who are unemployed, jobless, frustrated, angry young people could be, you know, transformed into violent rebel-type groups in support of the coup leaders in the country. And that can have a huge impact on security in the sub-region.
Advocates continue to urge ECOWAS to solve the Niger crisis diplomatically to avoid any economic and security catastrophe for all of West Africa. Sena Anutod for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
In South Korea, ordinary citizens have been taking part in defensive training for the first time in years, joining U.S. and South Korean forces amid growing provocations from North Korea. VOA's Eunice Kim takes us there.
An air raid siren blares as police halt vehicles and pedestrians are ushered to shelter. A civil defense drill is revived for the first time in 6 years, urging residents to pause and take part in the Uchi Freedom Shield exercise. The U.S. and South Korea hold the drill each year, but with growing provocations from North Korea, this year citizens joined in.
South and North Korea are currently in a truce, so I'm scared that a war could break out again.
North Korea using its nuclear weapons is a real possibility, said South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol. He visited a combined U.S. and South Korean military bunker, saying the allies would respond immediately and decisively to any attack from the North. With Pyongyang showing no sign of returning to talks, the leaders of the U.S., South Korea, and Japan held a summit at Camp David last week. They agreed to bolster trilateral exercises and consult on security crises or threats. U.S. security officials say PACs at the summit were based on common concerns and an understanding that a challenge to any one of the allies is a challenge to all. North Korea has pushed back, threatening, quote, an unprecedented large-scale thermonuclear war should the agreements be followed through. Pyongyang fired up a spy satellite mounted on a ballistic technology-driven rocket early Thursday, which failed. The civil drill reminded some South Koreans, like Oh Sung-kyung, about the importance of maintaining peace.
If I had a wish for my children, it would be peace without war.
Eunice Kim, VOA News, Seoul.
2023 has brought yet another new way to use artificial intelligence online. As Maxim Moskalkov reports, some companies are using the tool to make avatars of people that seem fully lifelike, including for people who have died.
Using artificial intelligence to allow people to stay in touch with a loved one that passed away is being offered by a few startup companies. The so-called resurrection relies on creating chatbots or virtual doubles based on a deceased person's social data, images, voice and text messages, emails, etc. Michael Young works for a company called DeepBrain AI that creates the AI doubles.
So Maxim, let's say I want to create a view. Then we go to studio and we film you and you read 300 to 500 sentences in front of the camera. And then we have that original video sources and when we do 1 month of machine learning. After 1 month of machine learning, we just create of your AI avatar. Your digital twin of your avatar gonna talk.
Here is founder and CEO of a company called Storyfile, Steven Smith, sharing some biographic details. In reality, it's not Smith, but his avatar. The real Smith says his company allows anyone to tell their life story.
Think of it like a living photograph album that, you know, we've all done this for, you know, since the camera existed. What we're doing is using AI to support the person who, as an ancestor, passes down their memories as they would do in any other form.
Associate Professor of Religion at Baylor University, Candy Ken, believes AI could serve as a good therapeutic tool that can help grieving people.
Let's say you had a fight with your mom before she died, and so you are encouraged by your therapist to write a letter to your mom about the things you wish you had said instead and the response you might have received from your mother in that situation.
But the idea of digital resurrection is a complicated concept, both legally and ethically, says Irina Reiku, director of the Internet Ethics Program at Santa Clara University.
In a way, the sense that we can somehow keep a tech version of loved ones alive strikes me as a weird kind of relative of embalming. That instead of embalming somebody's body and trying to keep them with us, we are trying to embalm their minds.
Clarence Jones, who runs the Institute for Nonviolence and Social Justice at the University of San Francisco, says it could be a way to retain some people's historical legacy.
I think it's a superb technology. In fact, I think it's the technology of the future. And I want to help them in any way possible, because there are people living currently far more important than I am, whose information they should reporting and reduce to a story file.
As with most new technologies, there is a great potential here and a great potential for abuse. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, we thank you very much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Lori London in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a wonderful weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This week marks 18 months since Russia's illegal, unprovoked invasion of its sovereign neighbor, Ukraine. Russian armed forces specifically targeted civilian infrastructure such as schools and hospitals, fields and grain storage, killing thousands of Ukrainian civilians and displacing millions more. Yet Russia continues to falsely allege that it is in fact the unified support of Ukraine's defense by over 50 nations that it is exacerbating the war and hindering peace discussions, said alternate United States representative to the United Nations, Robert Wood.
Russia is telling us that it is not the invading country that is responsible for the crisis, but rather alleging it is the country doing everything in its power to defend itself from an illegal invasion that is at fault. This narrative is hypocritical and preposterous, and it strains credulity to the breaking point.
While Russia attempts to brazenly rewrite this history, we cannot be distracted from the truth of Russia's destabilizing activities in Ukraine and elsewhere, said Ambassador Wood. Russia's irresponsible nuclear rhetoric and its announced stationing of its nuclear weapons on the territory of Belarus risks further aggravating an already highly dangerous situation.
The Russian Federation is seeking increased military cooperation with the DPRK, including by pressing Kim Jong-un to sell additional arms to Moscow to fuel its war in Ukraine. Furthermore, Russia has procured armed drones from Iran and then deployed these UAVs in cruel, lethal attacks against civilians in Ukraine.
Let's be clear, said Ambassador Wood. Western weapons provided to Ukraine to prevent Russia's brutalization of Ukraine's people are not the cause of this war, nor are they prolonging this war. That responsibility is the Kremlin's alone. Russia remains the sole obstacle to peace in Ukraine.
The government of Ukraine and the United States continue to work together to maintain safeguards against diversion while responsibly providing for Ukraine's ability to exercise its inherent right of self-defense against Russia's brutal war. Ukraine has been a transparent and willing partner as we stress accountability and ensure robust processes to counter any attempts at illicit diversion.
The United States will continue to demonstrate its enduring commitment to supporting Ukraine's self-defense, said Ambassador Wood, including through the provision of arms and equipment that enable Ukraine to defend its territory and protect its people from Russia's unprovoked and unjustified aggression.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.